Yeah, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking by phone with an attorney in Arkansas, Clifford Jackson. Cliff, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Steve.
And I might just say right off the bat that Cliff and I have never met. He's not the author of a book that's been published that I've read. I know him through social media, and specifically Facebook, where he has a site that has generated a lot of interest. He has a lot of friends. Is it true you have 5,000 friends on that Facebook?
I think it's 5,002 right now. Yes. The limit is 5,000. I occasionally get one or two over.
So if new people want to join and be a part of that conversation, you have to get rid of somebody else.
Well, they drop off occasionally, too.
People get mad at you, do they?
Probably so, because I express very definite views on there.
And I might just thank my friend Linda Kane, who introduced me to you via Facebook, and I've appreciated that, and I've enjoyed reading many of the things that you've posted and the comments you get from others. But before we get into talking about that, we're calling this discussion today, the way you've described yourself, among other things, is as a Christian agnostic. And so we're going to talk today about how one can have faith and doubt at the same time.
Yes.
And I take it, although you call yourself a Christian agnostic or an agnostic Christian, what we're going to talk about will have relevance to people of other faith traditions that also have doubts.
I'm sure it will, yes.
Well, let's begin with something you posted fairly recently on Facebook, which is a quotation from Mark Twain. Now, tell us where this comes from.
It comes from an unfinished work called The Mysterious Stranger that he was writing at the time of his death.
And Twain... this was published then after his death?
Yes, it was published after his death. And in the book, The Mysterious Stranger, the person speaking in the quote that you want me to read is Satan, son of Satan.
Okay.
Okay?
So this is Mark Twain imagining what Satan might be saying about God, right?
Okay, yes.
Why don't you read us a bit, and let me again remind listeners this is a live call-in show, and later you'll have an opportunity to join this conversation today, which is live with Clifford Jackson in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Cliff, let's hear this reading from Mark Twain.
Okay. In a little while, you will be alone in shoreless space to wander its limitless solitudes without friend or comrade forever, for you will remain a thought, the only existent thought, and by your nature inextinguishable, indestructible. But I, your poor servant, have revealed you to yourself and set you free. Dream other dreams and better. Strange that you should not have suspected years ago, centuries ago, eons ago, for you have existed companionless through all the eternities. Strange indeed that you should not have suspected that your universe and its contents were only dreams, visions, fiction. Strange because they are so frankly and hysterically insane, like all dreams. A God who could make good children as easily as bad, yet preferred to make bad ones. Who could have made every one of them happy, yet never made a single happy one. Who made them prize their bitter life, yet stingily cut it short. Who gave his angels eternal happiness, unearned, yet required his other children to earn it. Who gave his angels painless lives, yet cursed his other children with biting miseries and maladies of mind and body. Who mouths justice and invented hell, mouths mercy and invented hell, mouths golden rules and forgiveness multiplied by 70 times 7 and invented hell. Who mouths morals to other people and has none himself. Who frowns upon crimes, yet commits them all. Who created man without invitation, then tries to shuffle the responsibility for man's acts upon man, instead of honorably placing it where it belongs, upon himself.
That is God.
That's right, upon God. And finally, with altogether divine obtuseness, invites this poor, abused slave to worship him. The quote raises the issues of pain and suffering, hell, and the worship of God, I think.
And I think it's wonderful to have that those words that Twain put in the mind of the mouth of Satan being read by someone from the South. I mean, because so often what we hear from the South are people who speak for God, not for Satan, if you'll excuse my saying so.
Well, interestingly enough, some of your listeners may remember me as a friend of Bill Clinton's from years ago, and the national media labeled me his nemesis or his arch enemy because I helped him dodge the draft. And just as a little curious side note, in 1997, purely by coincidence, my wife goes to get my license plate for my F-150, and it comes back 666-BHM. And I jokingly told people it means 666 Bill his mark, or Bill and Hillary's mark. So yeah, all of us in the South are not the same. The South, as Flannery O'Connor said, is, we're very aware of religion and Christ. But I've read, before this book, Twain's Letters from the Earth, which is along the same lines.
You mentioned Flannery O'Connor. I used one of a book that collected a bunch of stories from the South in a course here at the University of Illinois on Christianity and Literature, and the book was by Ketchum, and its title was a quote from Flannery O'Connor, the fact that the South is Christ-haunted, haunted by Christ.
Yes, Christ-haunted is the word.
Christ-haunted fiction, I think, was the title of that book. Now, you knew Clinton when you were in Oxford on a Fulbright scholarship, and he was there on
A Rhodes Scholarship.
A Rhodes Scholarship,
yes, uh-huh. We were the only Arkansans there.
Uh-huh. And he later said some nasty things about you.
Yeah, I have him on a tape from a New Hampshire radio station that called me a longtime, bitter, right-wing Republican, religious zealot who for years has tried to bring me down. And so your listeners can determine today whether I'm any of that. You know, the answer is I'm not. I'm about the opposite of each one of those.
So when Clinton was mad at you for revealing some of the things, I guess that was in a letter he'd sent in his Oxford days, which ended up getting him in trouble with about some of his claims about avoiding the draft.
Well, he had actually received a draft notice, and I helped him kill it after he had received it. And the interesting thing was I'd been persuaded that he had never received one because he'd gone all over the country saying he had never received a draft notice. And then I found some letters from the summer of 69 that outlined in detail what he and I had done. And so I later went on Larry King Live and told about it. And, of course, that was crossing the Rubicon.
Now, you and Bill Clinton share not only an Arkansas background, but an interesting religious background. Tell us about your religious past. You grew up Pentecostal.
Yes, I grew up in a small community, Antioch, 20 miles from here in Hot Springs, which is Bill Clinton's hometown. I proudly called Antioch a suburb of Possum Trot, in case you don't know where Antioch is. I was Assemblies of God. It's a little small country church there. I later went to Lyon College in Batesville, Arkansas, which is a liberal Presbyterian school. So I have elements of both, the Pentecostal experience and the liberal theology in my thinking.
And yet in your writing that people can read on Facebook if they can get in that Cliff Jackson site, you show no mercy towards many Pentecostal preachers on radio and TV and the people who go around the country healing people and taking a lot of folks' money.
I think it is a travesty what passes as Christianity on quote-unquote Christian television today. It's nothing more in this variant of prosperity gospel preachers that you see, starting with Oral Roberts down through Kenneth Copeland, Mike Murdoch, you name it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them, and your listeners probably don't even watch these people, and I don't either, except in flipping by. I will listen a while just to make myself mad. But, yeah, it's the opposite of what Christ taught. It's saying that if you give to me, you will get rich. If you give to me, God will bless you. And they'll get on these fundraisers and say, the Holy Spirit has told me there's 70 people out here that's supposed to give $1,000, and you'll be rewarded 70-fold. You know, it's manipulation. It's not faith.
And it's kind of like gambling. It appeals to people who are desperate for money and gullible.
It does. It gulls the gullible, preys on the praying. It's rooted, Steve, in the New Thought movement from the 19th century, where, and it's part of the New Age. I mean, what you see in this particular variant of Pentecostalism and Christianity is really no different than New Age. The New Age, The Secret, Marianne Williamson, Course in Miracles, Lifespring, they're all founded on the same thesis as this Word Faith movement is called. And the emphasis is on the spoken word, that you can speak reality into existence and cause it to manifest. And both of them believe that, on the New Age side and on this particular variant of Christianity, that if you just have enough faith and say the words, and of course send a contribution to the Lord's post office box in Tulsa or Dallas or where Orlando or wherever, then you should be healed, you should become wealthy. And they even preach that to be poor is a sin. It's just incredible to me that Pentecostalism has come to this point, from growing out of a poor people's movement into a movement that glorifies materialism and appeals to greed. But that's what it does. And you know, it's the most, Pentecostalism is the third wave of Christianity. You know, back in the 1960s, liberal Harvard theologian Harvey Cox wrote a book called he was one of the gurus about the death of God, the death of God theology movement, I'm sure you remember.
Sure.
Well, in 1996 or so, he published a book, Fire from Heaven, about the worldwide Pentecostal movement, calling it the third branch of Christianity, and prognosticating and stating very, very outrightly that he was wrong, that God was not dead, Christianity did not crash, it didn't go away. In fact, it's expanded in this group around the world, such that it will be larger than Catholicism within the next, I forget, 20 or 30 years, you know, or his numbers. And yet, to a great extent, it's being done by the beaming of TBN, Trinity Broadcasting Network, and God Network from England into Africa and South America, the Third World, and, you know, preaching this prosperity gospel that God wants you to be rich. You know, to be poor is a sin. That really distresses me.
Now, people have been talking about including psychologists, about the power of positive thinking and how important it is to have an adequate self-concept, and how, you know, you have to have, even in corporations, you know, vision setting and what are our goals, and you have to have goals to accomplish them. Why are you so skeptical?
I do believe in the power of positive thinking. I simply don't think that if I speak the words, God heal me, and I send a contribution to Oral Roberts or whoever, that God must heal me. That is reversing the God-man relationship. It's giving God no choice, is the theology that these people preach. And in fact, it's really making the deity the spoken word. The actual words. And then if the healing doesn't happen, if you don't get rich, the answer is you didn't have enough faith.
Or give enough money to the evangelist.
Give enough money. That's right.
We're talking Keeping the Faith today with an attorney from Hot Springs, Arkansas, Clifford Jackson.
Just call me Cliff. I shortened it after I left Antioch.
And Cliff Jackson has a wonderful, interesting Facebook site with over 5,000 people who check it out fairly regularly and make comments and read what he has to say, what he's been thinking about. He is a former Fulbright scholar, studied at Oxford, Antioch College. We're happy to have him on Keeping the Faith today, talking about faith and doubt, being a Christian agnostic, as he has described himself.
Well, I describe myself that way, Steve, because I'm not comfortable with calling myself a Christian, given what passes for Christianity in the current age. I think if Jesus himself were to come back, he would be disgusted. Years ago, I saw a T-shirt in New Orleans that I wish I'd bought. On the front, it said, "Jesus is coming soon." And on the back of it said, "And boy, is he pissed." And I tend to think he is, you know, with what is done in his name today in the church.
If listeners have a comment or a question, we're happy to have you join this conversation and ask our guest, Cliff Jackson, a question or make a comment. We do ask you keep your comments brief so we can include as many people as possible. The phone numbers are 333-9455. That's in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois listening area in the 217 area code. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station. And if you're listening long distance, 1-800-222-9455 will put you in contact with our good technical director, Kyle Croatch. He'll put you in line to be on the air live with our guest today. Again, that long-distance number is 1-800-222-WILL or 9455. And, of course, if you miss part of this program, your schedule doesn't allow you to hear all of it. At your convenience, via your computer or various other devices, smartphones and so forth, you can hear this. It's archived within a couple days, usually, but surely within a week or two. You can go to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith and leave the G off of keeping because we're so informal here. So, will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith, and you can hear this program in its entirety at your convenience or other previous programs. And I might just say that next week, since I'll be traveling happily to Savannah, Georgia, to see my extended family, we'll be playing an archive program of someone from Palestine, from Gaza, Izzeldin Aboulaj. We interviewed live last February, and we're replaying that. It's been requested by several folks. We'd like to hear it over the radio again. It's a program on Islam, forgiveness, and peace. Dr. Aboulaj is sometimes known as the Gaza doctor, who wrote a very interesting book, very moving book, called I Shall Not Hate, after three of his daughters were killed in a bomb attack in Gaza. And yet he continues to be a obstetrician, helping people give birth not only in Palestine but in Israel to both Jews, Muslims, Christians, and others. So that program will be replaying on November 27, the Sunday after Thanksgiving. But getting back to our guest today, Cliff Jackson. Cliff, you use some other adjectives to describe your faith, your doubt. What are some of those other seemingly opposite phrases you've used?
Well, I've called myself a Christian being driven from the fold by narrow, closed minds. I've called myself a Christ follower. I've called myself a Christian agnostic. I've called myself an existentialist Christian. To put the topic of our discussion into context, would you mind if I read just a brief excerpt from a foreword to a book I'm working on?
That'd be fine.
Okay, it's about faith and doubt, and this is from the foreword. Before you begin reading this, please understand that I am likely to be maligned and criticized by Christian fundamentalists and atheist agnostics alike, since I fully occupy neither of their worlds and reject both of their belief systems, at least in part. You will find me, the real me, poised here on a high wire, equidistant between what people wrongfully, I think, call the extremes of faith and doubt. And I hope you will come to understand that informed faith is not blind acceptance, and that debilitating doubt is not intellectual honesty. That there is a place in our being where both the brain and the heart, both reason and emotion, both faith and doubt, can reside, each having some essence of the other, each ebbing and flowing, first one and then the other, faith thriving and then flickering, and doubt flaring and then fading, in a repetitive and eternal counterpoise dance on the verge of knowing and not knowing, through all of which I survive and I flourish, because hope resides here. To this I give testimony of myself. In the stillness between the two worlds, in that place I describe to you herein, not just any hope, but that blessed hope that stems from both faith and doubt, but that is most linked to the Pentecostal experientialism of my youth. And I know beyond the necessity of justifying it, as did my mother and my father, and that long list of progenitors before them who rejected despair and clung to hope, that which I feel, I know, and that which I know is real and genuine and authentic because I sense it and accept it as a child, confident in my intuitive experience of truth and convinced beyond the need for argument that truth and happiness are not mutually exclusive, are not at polar extremes, but arguing alternatively as a lawyer now, if they are, then the extremes are right next to one another, and I can hopefully reach across the narrow, lightless void where one ends and embrace the other, where it too ends or perhaps begins. For who is to know in this life what is a beginning and what is an ending? You see, Steve, I think that faith and doubt are just flip sides of the same coin. Too much of Christianity insists that we quote-unquote know. And quite frankly, none of us know. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. Whether we're atheists, and there are fundamentalist atheists, by the way, who are just as ardent as fundamentalist people of faith who claim they know and are not open to a competing view. There are rationalists who view truth as only being something derived by reason, that you reach God only by way of reason. You have the emotional religions, such as Pentecostalism, that say, no, you reach God through the heart. Well, to me, you reach God at the conjunction of the heart and the brain. You have to apply both, because if you look at God and search for God with only one aspect of your being, you are getting a skewed picture. And you have to look at Him by way of the heart truths that are just as valid. And by that, I mean the emotions, the feelings, the intuition that are just as valid as any rational truth. I call them the non-rational truths. I will even embrace the irrational, which rationalists will condemn. But there's validity to some of that as well, I think. And only when we apply both our brains and our hearts and align the two, I think, can we really come to a place where we see God. And the God I see is not the God that Mark Twain sets up as a straw man and demolishes. And that's all too often what happens with atheists who, they set up the fundamentalist view of the Scripture, view of God, view of Jesus, and then they demolish it. Of course they do. I mean, when I was a kid, I always wondered, why does God favor the buzzards, the dung beetles, and the maggots over in the Holy Land? Because he killed all these heathen people, all these men, women, boys, girls, babies, animals, even the heathen babies, you know. The Bible says it, if you read it literally. I do not read it literally. I think the Bible is holy, it's inspired, it contains the Word of God, but I do not think it's infallible or inerrant or literal. For example, on the issue I just brought up, the problem of God's evil that Twain alludes to, you know, the killing of all, the genocide. I mean, how can fundamentalists worship a genocidal God? To me, that makes no sense. If he is a God of love, a God of mercy, even a God of justice, there is no justice in killing 60,000 people. No. What we have is a situation, I think, where we read the Scripture, yes, it says there that God ordered these people to do that. But people are inclined in whatever age to give credit and blame to God for stuff that's of their own doing. And that's the way I view it.
So some listener might be thinking, how do you decide when you're, say, reading the Bible? Here this says, God told me this land was going to be my people's land, and it's all right to kill everybody who's there now. How do you know whether that, how do you decide whether that was true, or whether when Jesus says, love your enemy, you should do that?
But because in the instance of the God of the Old Testament, to attribute those things as literally having been ordered by God is to negate all the attributes that we, you know, how we perceive God, of mercy, love, justice, because there's no mercy, no love, certainly not even any justice in any of that.
But that's true from the Jewish scriptures as well, that God is merciful and loving, and we're supposed to love enemies and
welcome
the stranger. And so those passages you were quoting in Joshua are conflicting with passages that you find in the Torah.
If you look at them literally, but as I say, you can say literally, I read the Bible this way. This literally happened. You know, there was an Eden. There was a literal Adam, a literal Eve. Literally, God ordered genocide. Okay? Or you can say, no, that's inconsistent with the person that I perceive as God. And the person I perceive as God, you know, in this age, informed by science, informed by cosmology, by cutting-edge theoretical physics, is a God who lurks behind, and we can call him an entity, a force, first cause, whatever. But it's a creature, a being, a force that lurks behind not only our universe, but perhaps an infinite number of universes in a multiverse. And, you know, just making reference to a science program I saw two nights ago, right now scientists don't even think the Big Bang is the beginning of things. They think there were universes before the Big Bang. Maybe an infinite number of Big Bangs, contractions, and that's only our universe. Now, when Twain says, you know, God demands that we worship him, I don't view it that way. I think God, when you perceive the God who is this awesome, if in fact he exists, and this, you know, with the wonder of all this creation, I think you have no choice. You know, you cannot not worship such a being.
We're about halfway.
Now, do I know that? No, I don't know it because I'm an agnostic. I believe it. I can't prove it. Neither can anybody else.
But those are your thoughts.
Those are my thoughts. Those are my views after a lifetime of thinking about this. I mean, how do we reconcile, you know, the Bible with, and the literal view of the Bible, I guess, that I grew up with and that many Christians still embrace. You know, how do we reconcile that with modern science? How do we reconcile it with the nature of God? And those are fun. You know, how do we reconcile it with the problem of pain and suffering in the world? That's a big issue for me. I mean, why would a loving God allow pain, suffering, disease, death, hunger, so on and so forth? I mean, I have real problems with that. And yet, and Rabbi Kushner's When Bad Things Happen to Good People, I've read five or six or eight times because I think he, although Jewish and I'm a Christian, has many of the answers that no Christian writer I've read has, and I tend to agree with him. However, I make one final view of things that I've sort of come up with, and it's from Revelation 21:4, and I'm reading from the King James Bible, and it says, "And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." Now, the traditional interpretation of that is that that's what, you know, they're speaking of heaven in the future. When you go to heaven, all this is going to happen. But that's not what it says. It says, "And God shall wipe away all tears." Now, follow me, Steve. All means all, I think, past, present, future. Because if you have a God who is outside the time-space axis, who created time and space, then by definition, he can scroll back time to a point where this never happened, similar to what Twain was talking about in the piece I read at the beginning, about it's all a dream, an illusion. Now, does that mean that those who experienced the Holocaust, it didn't really happen? You know, I can't answer that. I mean, it sure feels like it happens to us in this existence. But I believe that God can wipe away all tears, including past tears, because if he created time, he created space, then he is capable of creating a state of existence that's never, that I call never was. It never was.
We're halfway through our program, Keeping the Faith, this afternoon, talking with our guest, Cliff Jackson, talking with him by phone from Hot Springs, Arkansas. Cliff is a recently retired attorney at law. He's had a very interesting past. We talked a little bit about that earlier. We'll get back to talking with Cliff in just a moment. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Since we're just the Sunday before Thanksgiving, let me give thanks for some people around here on WILL who've been supportive of this program over the last dozen years or so. I want to particularly thank Jay Pierce, who's no longer here, sadly, with WILL. It was a great tragedy. We lost him to another NPR station in the Quad Cities. But for all 12 and a half years of this program, when Jay was here as program director and other positions, he was quite supportive and helpful over all those years. He was one of the great radio voices and personalities that I've sure ever known in several states. He's quite a person here at WILL. Jay Pierce, thanks to you. Thanks also to our current Sunday afternoon and Saturday technical director, Kyle Crowa. I've had several technical directors over the 12 years, but I'm thankful for all of them because I have no technical expertise at all. So without them, this would be impossible. Harriet Williamson is currently helping in a production capacity as one of the part-time producer for the show, and appreciate her work as well. And we've had other people who've done that over the years, and I'm thankful again for that help. And, of course, to listeners who call in and make comments and ask questions and suggest people they'd like to hear or perhaps even volunteer to be on the show themselves, although one of my rules over the years generally has been if you want to be on Keeping the Faith, maybe you shouldn't be, because people who tend to be evangelists and want to tell everybody what they think, they usually can find a way and have. And so I try to give voice to people who maybe are less heard, less often heard. I might just mention that this show, when it started 12 and a half years ago here on this regional NPR station in Illinois and Indiana, one of the reasons I brought the idea to this station was because All Things Considered didn't really consider religion, belief, spirituality, ethics, values as a topic very often. And I loved listening to NPR. I'd appreciate All Things Considered in many ways, but I was disappointed with their coverage of spirituality and religion. I want to thank the listener who sent me a copy of this week's National Catholic Reporter that has an article in the opinions page, the major article, in fact, called NPR, Not Particularly Religious. this writer, Heidi Schlumpf, talks about public radio's reporting generally neglects people of faith and religion. One of the reasons I think this station was wise in allowing people to call in and talk about these kind of things and be guests on this show once a week is to sort of fill that gap. And so I'm grateful for that opportunity. Coming up on Keeping the Faith, as I mentioned, next week, an archive program from last February, on Islam, Forgiveness, and Peace with the guest, Dr. Izzeldin Ebulaish, author of I Shall Not Hate. He was a visitor here to the Champaign-Urbana community, and I was fortunate to get to hear him speak several times and interview him on the radio. December 4th, I'm still not certain who we're going to have as a guest. We've invited someone, but I don't have a confirmation yet. December 11 is sure. Amy Frickholm, who's a regular writer for the Christian Century, has a new book out called See Me Naked that interviews people about sexuality and their faith. And it's a fascinating book, which I've read, and I think it'll be a good interview December 11. Urbana Chief of Police Patrick Connolly will be our guest here on Keeping the Faith December 18, talking about the police in the community. Chief Pat Connolly has been very active as police chief in visiting the various religious communities in Urbana, trying to visit churches and synagogues and mosques and as one way to be involved in the community. So we'll be talking about the police in relation to the community with Police Chief Patrick Connolly. Again, that's December 18. Those are some of the programs up ahead on Keeping the Faith. And again, if you've missed part of this program or want to hear previous ones, go to our website, will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith, and you can listen at your convenience. Well, let's get back to our guest, Cliff Jackson. And again, the phone numbers, for those of you who'd like to ask him a question, I'm happy to keep asking questions, but I know other people enjoy that too. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. If it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, that can be used by people who are listening live on the Internet, where this program is heard around the world. But if you're in the continental U.S., you can use that number to make a toll-free call. Again, 1-800-222-WILL. And you are listening to WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana. Well, back to Cliff. Cliff, you were just talking before we left about the problem of evil. Is this more or less of a problem for an agnostic who's a Christian?
I think many Christians don't question, and they just simply accept it and don't probe the issue. I think it's more of a problem probably for an agnostic. You know, doubts can be debilitating if they go too far. But doubts can also be enabling. They can shed light upon a subject. The use of the mind is something that, you know, a lot of churches insist you not do. You simply accept the dogma. You check your brain at the church house door. You know, I'm just not built that way.
We have a caller waiting to join our conversation on line number one from Savoy. Go ahead. You're on the air with Cliff Jackson.
Well, thank you. There are three parts to my interest here. The biggest one is, what do you think it is about the people that leaves them so susceptible to these fake Christians on the televangelism networks? And related to that, let's just leave it at that, and we'll...
Okay, so you why don't you stay on the line, and if you have a follow-up, you can respond after Cliff says his thoughts.
Thank you.
Okay, I think many people confuse Christianity with magic, and they're looking for magic. They're looking for miracles. Pentecostalism too often deifies experience, just as fundamentalism deifies the Bible. I mean, it's sort of like it's the fourth part of the Godhead. I mean, it's holy, it's inerrant, it's infallible. Well, you know, the Bible itself says that the Word was made flesh, and that was Jesus. The Word, capital W, is not the Bible. But people need hope. Faith stems from hope. I mean, hope stems from faith, and they want to believe the seemingly impossible. It's part of our human nature, I think. And these people are very smooth. I mean, they're appealing to people's greed, to their self-interest. It's a very deceptive and manipulative practice, I think, that crept into the church.
Well, hello?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, related to this, some decades ago, I don't really have any ability to say approximately when, there was some big comeuppance that occurred, and there were some actual congressional hearings, and old Oral got up there and sort of begged the Congress people not to mess with things and change things. Do you remember what that was? And
yes,
that
I do. Senator Grassley of Iowa had a committee that investigated a number of these big evangelists. I think it did include Oral Roberts, it included Benny Hinn, it included Mike Murdoch, it included, well, I forget, Kenneth Copeland, I know. But, you know, we're dealing with issues of the Constitution that provides for the separation of church and state, and these people hide behind that. But for that, a lot of what they do in the name of God, in the name of religion, in the name of Jesus, would be nothing more than federal crimes of wire fraud or mail fraud, I think, quite frankly. But with our Constitution in place, you know, people are free to gullible, particularly in the religious community, is ultimately it ended up with no action being taken. Some of the ministries were transparent. Kenneth Copeland, for example, refused to disclose anything to the committee.
Did you remember?
And yet he has, I think, five corporate jets. You know, it just goes on, and it's just sickening.
Yeah, it is. I completely agree with you. It is really, really sickening. Did you say, do you remember about when that was?
Well, I think the committee just ended up maybe even earlier this year. I mean,
this was one. I'm trying to remember one way back.
Well, it went on for a number of years.
Oh.
Yeah, it went on for a number of years, and they collected information and finally sort of folded.
Oh.
It didn't lead to the result that I hoped it would.
Would you happen to have a good guess as to when Oral got up there and did his thing in front of him?
No, I don't know, but Oral's good at doing his thing. And by the way, he's one of the chief culprits in this seed faith thing that he promotes. You know, you plant a seed, that's a translation meaning send me money, and you will get rich. Other people have picked up on that, and they just milk it for all it's worth.
Well, it's at least unchristian, but I think it deserves even worse words. Thank you very much.
Well, I agree with you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And again, other callers, 333-9455 if you're in the 217 area code, elsewhere 1-800-222-9455. You said, Cliff, earlier that Pentecostalism deifies experience. Emotions do play an important part in spirituality and religion, many different faiths. How can we judge good, positive emotions, ones that we can trust, and ones that are going to get us into real big trouble?
Well, I don't know. But when I say it deifies experience, I mean that it's at the fringes of Pentecostalism, there's constantly a search for some new thing. You know, for example, one of the latest things way out on the fringe is holy laughter, quote unquote, you know, where people just laugh hysterically, you know. But, you know, I affirm emotionalism. I mean, it's not something that I'm condemning. I think it is an aspect of worship. And I could not personally, perhaps because of my background, really attend a church that focused solely on reason as the way to reach God. I mean, I think there is a place for the heart to worship God. Now, how do you distinguish? I think most people are sincere. They're honest. You know, they're not faking it. I'm not saying this of the people of Pentecostals. They're not. I mean, it's real. But some of the evangelists and the televangelists simply take it too far. And I don't think they're real. I think it's fake, phony, and it's just sad to me to watch them gull the people.
You mentioned attending church. Does a Christian existentialist like yourself, a Christian agnostic, find a community to worship with, or do you?
That is a hard one, Steve. No, I don't, because I don't fit in anywhere. I mean, the truth is, I really don't fit in anywhere. So the answer is no. I guess out of all the ministers I know, the person with whom I would most identify would be Dr. Lloyd John Ogilvie, who's a Presbyterian, used to be pastor of Hollywood First Presbyterian Church, was dean of or chaplain of the United States Senate for a number of years in the 1990s, and he's a charismatic Presbyterian. So he employs both his heart and his mind in his faith, and it shows. I mean, he is like a college professor I had years ago, about the closest to a Christ-like person that I know. I mean, he is authentic, and that's the highest compliment I can pay to a minister, to say, you're authentic, you know, you're real, you reflect Christ.
Now, I've been in several congregations where people who have a lot of doubts and ask a lot of hard questions and try to be in touch with both reason and emotions, where they feel quite comfortable. I'm not sure you've looked far enough.
Maybe not, but then remember, I live in Hot Springs, Arkansas. That's the Bible Belt. I don't have a whole lot of choices. I would probably be most comfortable in a liberal charismatic church.
Huh.
But there's not such here.
Uh-huh.
There are very few of them nationwide, I think.
Uh-huh. And what does liberal mean to you?
Liberal means an open mind, the right to doubt, the right to question, not viewing the Bible as literal. You know, the social justice outreach of the liberal churches is very important to me. You know, it's not just the go ye into the world and preach the gospel of the evangelical fundamentalists, but the other great commission of Jesus was to love your neighbor, and that means the people of the world, and to reflect that. And unfortunately, many churches are simply social institutions. I mean, they look inward, not upward. And upward is basically, to my view, it's downward in the gutters where the hurting humanity is. And yet, so much of the budgets of most churches go toward just internal maintenance, just treading water, and that does cause me problems. Now, I'm not condemning blanketly. I don't want to overreach, because there are many, many, many churches that do many, many good things, including promoting the gospel and social outreach. But that is not the primary focus of many churches.
Now, in a lot of Christian congregations around the world this morning, Sunday morning, the scripture that was recommended or assigned through the lectionary committees where it was Matthew 25 that does talk about, that you quoted earlier, about Jesus saying what people are supposed to be doing is helping the poor and visiting those in prisons and comforting the sick and feeding the hungry and clothing the naked. And in a lot of churches, both conservative and liberal and Pentecostal, I don't know about Pentecostal because they preach by what the preacher feels moved to preach, but people who follow this system of study at least heard that today. We have a caller waiting. Let's see what this person wants to add. This is on line number 4. Yes, you're on the
Hello?
Air. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I can. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, my name is Linda Kane, and I do know Cliff personally through Facebook. And he was talking about churches that he would feel comfortable in with his view of religion. And I had the same experience. I had been attending a Methodist church for many years and had an experience where I was feeling like if you didn't believe the way it was taught, then you were an outsider. And so I did some investigation and went to the local Unitarian church, because I had heard a lot of good things about their views of acceptance of people who were different, particularly acceptance of gay people. So my and then my experience was that they, and this is probably isolated to this one church, but I found that they were so anti-Christ that I could not go back, because I am a Christ follower, and a lot like Cliff, I don't hold the Bible to be the only, you know, the only word. I love the New Testament, and I believe some of the most everything that Jesus has taught us, and the things that he's taught us have been loving the poor, and the Sermon on the Mount is especially meaningful to me. But I was going to ask Cliff if he had ever visited a Unitarian church.
No, Linda, I have not visited a Unitarian church. I mean, Unitarian Universalist church. Well, yes, okay. I take that back. I have one time. But I'm like you. You know, I believe that God exists, and I believe it's more rational to believe that God exists and that he doesn't exist, because I simply don't have enough faith to get my mind around everything coming from nothing without a first cause, having caused it, with all the complex laws and ordered existence. How can we even dare to think that there is no God? So, and, you know, as for questioning God's existence, I go back to Job, to the conclusion that God spoke to Job, where he said, "Who are you to question me?" And really, who am I to question him? And yet, I feel free to question him. I feel free to doubt. I feel free to exercise my mind in the quest for truth, because truth is wherever it can be found. And at the Unitarian Universalist Church, you're right. From the one time I went years and years ago, there is sort of an anti-Christian bias. And I am a Christian. I mean, not just rationally believe in God. I accept Christ. I mean, I affirm Jesus, that Jesus the person and Jesus the teachings of Jesus are the most revolutionary and radical and transformative philosophy that's ever been spoken to this earth. The problem is, as Gandhi said, it's never been applied. Well, you know, that's hyperbole. Yes, it has been applied. But what Gandhi's saying is, universally, it's not applied even by the people who call themselves after his name. And that's very, very sad, because at the time he spoke, in an eye for an eye era, where he said, love your enemies, forgive, you know, show mercy, show compassion. These are values that were not reflected in his time, and even aren't reflected in our society and in our world today.
We're going to have to leave that response to that question there, because we have another caller waiting I want to try to squeeze in before the program ends. I want to thank Linda for calling. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith with our guest. Go right ahead.
Hi. I wonder if you've ever tried any of the branches of the Quakers, because Quakers have a lot in common with Pentecostals in that, in the belief that God continues to act now in our lives. It didn't just happen 2,000 years ago. And there's a great variety. There's some in my branch, which is the most liberal and has no pastors. There are Christocentric friends, and there are what are called universalist friends. And you might possibly find a community that you could worship with there. And all the branches pretty much have very strong social justice gospel, and it is a mystical religion.
Yes, I'm well aware of the Quakers. I don't think we have a congregation here in Hot Springs, Arkansas, but it does have some appeal to me from what I've read. And I do regularly read about practically all the religions in the world, because it's one of my great interests, Steve, as you know. I post a lot about religion and religious issues on Facebook, as well as political and big issue affairs.
Thank you for making that suggestion, and I might just add that because of various Unitarian Universalists that I've interviewed on this program over the last dozen years, there may be more diversity in most Unitarian congregations than the previous caller had experienced. I know some Unitarian Universalist members are Christocentric, as our Quaker friend just mentioned, and others are not.
Yes.
But they do vary congregation to congregation quite a bit.
And, of course, if I were to attend, I might have an influence on them, right?
Well, you might. Cliff, we're down to our last minute. Tell me how listeners can learn more about your thoughts.
I post regularly on Facebook. It's Cliff Jackson in Hot Springs, Arkansas. There's probably about 150 Cliff Jacksons on there, but it's Cliff Jackson, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And I regularly write notes and post comments, you know, on the religious faith and doubt agnostic area.
And you're working on a book that may come out someday. How far along are you on it?
Oh, actually, it's online that people can go to and read if they want to. It's at scripted.com, and it's called Childhood's Wren, Memories of the Dog Star. It's free.
That's scripted,
scribd.com. And my pen name there is Jack Clifford. And you have to look for Mindhunter, M-I-N-D, capital M. I-N-D, capital H, Hunter, and then all caps, I-N-F-J. And you'll
I-N-F-J.
Find my book there. Mindhunter, I-N-F-J.
All right. Well, thank you for that information. And listeners, again, if you missed part of this or want to hear part of it again, go to our archives. It'll be up in a day or two or certainly in a week. And that's at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. Leave the G off of keeping. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. And again, since it's before Thanksgiving, I do especially thank listeners who over the years have made so many nice comments to me when they've had the chance. And I've enjoyed talking with folks all these years and plan to keep doing it at least a while longer. Next week, again, we're playing an archive program from last February on Islam, Forgiveness, and Peace, from the Gaza Doctor, author of I Shall Not Hate. December 4 is still open. December 11, Amy Frickholm will be our guest. That's F-R-Y-K-H-O-L-M, author of See Me Naked, a brand new book on sexuality and faith. She's a regular writer for the Christian Century out of Chicago. And Patrick Connolly, who is the current chief of police in the city of Urbana, Illinois, will be our guest on December 18, talking about the police and the community. Chief Connolly has visited many worshiping congregations already in his tenure as chief of police and wants to continue doing that. He comes from a Roman Catholic background himself, but is very open to learning about the community of faith that makes up the very diverse city of Urbana, Illinois. I want to thank Cliff Jackson for being our guest today by phone. And again, thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
WILL has provided inspirational, educational, and entertaining programs for more than 90 years. We can continue the tradition of quality broadcasting for generations to come. Support what you love and invest in WILL's future by including Illinois Public Media in your estate plans. For Legacy Circle information, call Don DeBeard at 217-333-7300 or online at will.illinois.edu/support.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 9.